Hamm, chair of the People's Organization for Progress, speaking to us from the road in New Jersey. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez, and a happy first birthday to my precious pup, Zazu. She blew in on a nor'easter in December, reunited with her beloved twin brother, Kasha, at 4 months. And yesterday, they came together again to celebrate their first birthday, dancing and prancing in Central Park. Happy birthday, Kasha and Zazu Goodpup. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for two positions, Director of Finance and Administration and a Human Resources Manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warnock, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the, I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
It is the KBOO Fall Drive, and our theme is The Sounds of Democracy. Everything you hear on KBOO is, in its own way, the sound of democracy, because we are a community radio station. Community radio is one of the most democratic types of media. We're non-commercial and independent. We're supported by our members so that we can keep the airwaves democratic and continue to bring you the valuable voices of your community. Democracy is an experiment, and so is community radio. We're featuring content focused on democracy itself and democratic ideas across the schedule this drive, and you can support KBOO by donating right now. Go to kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or click donate in the KBOO mobile app. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I am Tammy, and with me is a lovely, jubilant, beautiful, amazing, smart, wicked smart, Althea. How are you, Althea?
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for all the compliments.
You like the wicked smart thing?
I like the wicked smart one.
Guess what movie I saw last night?
Do tell.
Well, if I thought you were wicked smart, you're supposed to know. Good Will Hunting.
Oh, okay. Well,
or Haunting, sorry.
Disproved my own thing. I haven't seen that movie. Maybe I should.
Can you hear? Did you hear the gasp?
I did hear the gasp. Okay, no, cool. It's coming through.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a recommended watch for sure-sies.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. You know, ready to get into it. Feeling a little bit like it's, you know, Friday. I'm almost there. I'm almost done with, and I can lay down when this day is over. So I'm looking forward to that. How are you doing?
The sweet slumber. I'm all right. I am struggling with the weather in my hair, but it's okay. Mm. It's trying to freeze it up, but I'm not going to let it. And it's been great. I'm really loving this weather. So if it's overcast, rainy, and cold, then I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, we differ on that point. Mm. I would kind of like the weather to make up its mind, this sort of like in-between thing. But I guess, I don't know.
It's made up its mind. It doesn't want to make up its mind.
I want to make it the weather's fault, and it's really just me, and I do this every year, forgetting by the time fall comes around, like, it's going to be gray and wet for 8 months, And I'm from here, so I don't know what my problem is. I think it's seasonal affective disorder, actually, is my problem. So looking at taking some vitamin D supplements.
Ooh, I highly recommend that.
Yeah.
Yes.
It made a big difference for me when I started doing it a couple years ago. And my roommate has one of those really bright lights, too. And she's like, you can use it. And I was like, it's blinding when I watch you do it, though. Anyway, maybe I will. I'll report back if I do.
Yes.
But anyway, this is The Gap. If you've never listened before, Tammy and I, we have our little talk show here on Friday mornings. And, you know, our show, why is it called The Gap? We are trying to bridge or mind or fill in any number of gaps. Gaps in our understanding, gaps between generations. First half of the show, we talk between the two of us. Sometimes we do interviews on local, national, international issues that, you know, we think deserve a second look. And then in the second half, we open up our phone lines to our listeners to ask our community questions. So look forward to that a little bit down the line.
Indeed, yes. And also, after Veterans Voice, so at 10 a.m., we are going to be doing a live interview with on Instagram Live, or just Instagram. We're going to be going live on Instagram.
Sure.
That's the semantics. And we're going to be hosting and speaking with Hiba and Hayat, who we spoke with, I think, either earlier this month or the end of last month.
It's been a few weeks. But they were putting together a fundraiser to help bring medical supplies to their community in Lebanon. So,
and we are going to be, you know, catching up with them, seeing what that trip was like, what the fundraiser was like, and pretty much just getting a bird's eye view of of the process. And hopefully folks can get inspired and tune in. Again, that's going to be on the Instagram.
Yeah, it's at The Gap Radio. If folks
at The Gap
Radio
is our Instagram. I think we're going to be going live on the KBOO Instagram page. So, at KBOO Radio.
Hello.
You can follow, share, add. What other words are there? What other adjectives, the verbs are we saying these words? All of these.
I think everything you said was right.
Yes. And that's what we do here. And if you enjoy what you hear on this show or other programs, whether it's the public affairs, the music, or anything and everything in between, KBOO, that's what KBOO does. It's here for the community, by the community, volunteer-powered, driven. And we are counting on your donation to keep us, you know, on the air, keep us thriving and chugging along. You can go to kboo.fm/give to make a donation, or you can text KBOO to 44321. Tomorrow is actually the last day of the drive, so you have about a little bit over 24 hours to truly make a difference and become a member today.
Yeah, and, you know, let me give a quick little shout-out to folks who've been supporting us recently. John, David, Joseph, James, Joseph, a different one. Thank you for helping to support our fall drive. And, yeah, you can check that out at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Shall we?
Fantastic, yes. So, like Althea mentioned, we do two parts. For the first part today, we're going to be... Oh, I wish I had a sound effect. We're going to be talking about... Striketober. Yes, interesting stuff is happening all over the country. From Kellogg to Nabisco, which we talked about a little bit on the show, and also John Deere, as well as Hollywood, believe it or not, the great Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh,
they're
also
getting along on this on a possible strike. But yes, we're going to take a look at that. But Althea, if you'd like to say some more about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a very interesting moment that we've got going on. The most recent one is that 10,000 John Deere workers at 14 different plants across the U.S. went on strike yesterday, which is a pretty hefty chunk taking action. I saw a video on Twitter of some like bikers blocking like preventing people who were hired as scabs from crossing the picket line, which was really cool to see. And yeah, there's about 1200 Kellogg's workers that are on strike right now. The production assistant union in Hollyweird.
I like that. Thank you, Althea. I appreciate that.
They're threatening to go on strike on Monday, depending on how contract negotiations pan out, and about 38,000 Kaiser Permanente workers in Oregon and California have authorized a potential strike. So they haven't gone on strike yet, but it is within the realm of possibility. And it's a very interesting time. Obviously, Striketober, striking in October. And today is actually, the 15th is National Strike Day, I believe. Mm. There's a national strike going on, too. So we may, even as the day kind of goes forward, see more folks on strike today.
Right. And, you know, when we were doing research for this, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff and specifically about John Deere, I didn't realize that when I was doing research that the CEO's salary went up by 160%.
Mm.
160%. Profits themselves grew at 61%.
Mm-hmm.
And they are supposedly will finish the year off with an estimated and this is a guesstimation, $5 billion. And so, you know, sometimes they say that the piece of the pie and all of this, the pie is getting much larger, much, much larger. And then, but somehow the workers are not seeing any of this. I think that a lot of these organizations, like, you know, we saw Nabisco also, profits soared through the roof during a pandemic when, you know, a big percent of the country wasn't working, wasn't able to work. And now they're just trying to be as PC as possible about this. They are being jerks. Not nice.
Yeah.
And the Nabisco workers also, John Deere workers, you know, strikes isn't like the first solution to a problem, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of like the last resort. So while we're, you know, kind of hearing about it, talking about it now, this has been like a long time in the works.
Yeah.
Also the coal miners, they're really getting like really... there's a shift in power, and the solidarity of the unions all over the country are huge, you know, huge for this momentum.
Yeah, well, and I think that's good that you pointed out that, like, yeah, a strike is kind of like the final step of like ratcheting up pressure on an employer, especially because, you know, for a lot of these workers, what they're striking about is that not only did their, you know, big wigs make record profits, it's that they're still trying to squeeze the workers. They're trying to cut their overtime. They're trying to cut their health care. They're trying to, you know, and in some cases it is like, you made record profits. Could we get a 3% raise? That'd be sweet. We like worked around the clock these past 19 months, you know? So, but that the profits are getting bigger, and yet they're still trying to squeeze every last like cent out of the little guy is, you know, is plenty of reason to strike. And it's indicative that we're seeing it in, I mean, I guess it is a lot of like manufacturing sector, but across, you know, brands, definitely like the Frito-Lay strike, the Nabisco strike, Kellogg's, that's all like food processing, but like John Deere, coal miners, there's like kind of a different sector there as well, which I think is interesting. The production assistant union hasn't gotten their contract renegotiated, which is interesting. So that's like TV and film production crew workers, because they can't get it, their contract. And their contract is with the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, which represents Disney, Warner Bros., and Netflix. And they have been getting the short end of the stick, I hear. I've been seeing a lot about that one on Instagram in particular.
Yeah, they, you know, luckily they have a lot of maneuvers there in Hollyweird to be able to, you know, kind of like spread the word around. And I think it's the IAS something.
IATSE, I believe.
Thank you. They say it, there's like a way to say it, but I haven't figured it out yet.
Okay, I won't try to butcher it here.
Which is the union for the, yeah, like you said, like the grip folks and, you know, just like the behind the scenes people. One of their requests was just longer lunch breaks, and that made me so sad. Because you think of a person standing in the heat, you know, and they're not getting treated like, you know, the movie stars and stuff. And, like, I'm just imagining, like, some person, like, trying to eat a sandwich real quick and, like, getting yelled at by someone for, like, you know. And it's like, I don't know, that just, like, made me so sad because it's so, like, it's human. It's like, you need to eat, you know, if you're going to, you know, we already live in this. On top of living in this society that's like completely taken away a lot of our, like, you know, taken away a lot of things that we want to do because we have to do things like work and produce things for the masses. Eating, you're not going to let your workers have like a, you know, it made me sad. Also, the Kaiser workers, they were there. I'm not sure if this is correct for Oregon as well as California. But from my understanding is that the Kaiser, some of the Kaiser workers who work as nurses were getting more money during COVID, during the pandemic, like at its height, because of like hazard pay, I believe it is what they're referring it to. And now they're going to take it away because, you know, oh, that's it. It's not, we're not in the height of it anymore. And I can totally understand that point of view of like, wait, you were able to do this and all of a sudden you can't. This makes no sense.
Yeah.
So I'm into it.
Yeah, I will. I listened to some nurses from the Oregon Nurses Association speaking about like what they've been dealing with and what they're requesting. And part of it is like a better like hiring pipeline, because I mean, also what you're dealing with in the nursing sector is people who are really, really burned out, who have been working overtime shifts. And in what they were talking about, like people were asking them like, well, you know, if you need a day off, why don't you just take one? Like, why don't you just call in, you know? But what they're saying, what they were saying is like, well, if I do that, then everything just gets lumped onto one of my coworkers. Like,
right.
It just doubles their work. There's not somebody else there that picks up the slack because there's already not enough people to go around. So doing, there's like a level of guilt. And, you know, people get into care professions because they care.
Right.
So to put them in this really tough situation is really heart-wrenching. And, you know, just how the tone and treatment of healthcare workers has changed over the course of the pandemic, you know, like I remember seeing in like March and April, like, you know, nurses and doctors like getting on planes to go to where it was the worst, you know, like trying to help out. And then now it's just been like 19 grueling months and since the Delta surge at the end of the summer, like hospitals full to the bursting and having to make like triage decisions about people who can, who have a best chance of living, and like they're the ones that are going to get care because you got beds in the hallway and stuff.
Oh yeah. So I do have a piece of audio that I could play, or we can talk about this tweet here from King Latifah.
Oh yeah.
That blew my mind.
Can I read it?
Yes, you might, please.
It's from at Harita Morales. Two words activated the American working class last year: essential workers. For the first time, America had to admit that its minimum wage workers are the backbone of the country and not expendable peons. That put a battery in them. Oh, that's like...
That's very true.
Yeah.
I remember when we, the you know, so again, this is in my memory, when we were putting essential workers and clapping for the heroes. Well, I'm not saying they aren't, you know, but we were putting like doctors and nurses with people that work at grocery stores. And I'm sorry, but one of these things is not like the other. And if we are going to be honest about the people that are putting themselves at risk for us to like eat or to go to the hospital, you know, to treat us at the hospitals, then like maybe minimum wage isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe like they're like, you really can't like to put a doctor next to someone who works at a grocery store. And at some point of the pandemic, I mean, again, this is all my opinion, at some point of the pandemic, they were being exposed. You know, they're on the front lines, like not in the front lines, you know. Oh, that was eloquent. And it was just, I was just always thought to myself, well, you know, they don't get paid and compensated the same even when they're being put on the front lines together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, well, I guess when we're ready to have that convo, we will. And I guess 19 months later, maybe we are. And King Latifah killed me with this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, and I think that I think that there's maybe like a more expansive understanding of like things that are worth fighting for from a union perspective, you know, because it's not just wages, right? Like the hazard pay that, you know, after like, I want to say like 4 months got stripped away from a lot of like essential like grocery workers and stuff, like that's pretty disheartening. But, you know, other sectors, they're fighting to keep their health care. They're trying to make sure that they, you know, as you said, they have breaks, that there are enough people staffed generally so that it's not, that their work is not so taxing and demoralizing at the same time. Like all of those are things that are worth pushing for, you know, even if the wage is decent, you know. It's like, and then you have to do the mental math of like how much is a wage worth if I don't get to eat for 12 hours, you know?
Yes, that activating phrase, essential workers, it really I think I wonder how many people felt, you know, the need to kind of reevaluate themselves and their position in society and what they do and be like, wait a minute,
mm-hmm.
I deserve more than this, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people did, and that's why we're seeing this Striketober, which again, striking is the last resort.
Yeah.
You know? It's not the first thing people go to.
Yeah, and it's interesting that because I can kind of recall, like, I don't know, like a point of, you know, someone trying to lecture you. It's like, hey, don't get mad at, you know, like workers that get your order wrong at X fast food joint. Like they work minimum wage. They're like doing their best. They're not like trying to screw you over. Like, don't get, you know, people screaming at fast food workers has never been a good look. But I think, you know, I remember those videos, I guess, and photos of over the summer of like fast food restaurants at the drive-through speaker being like, no one's gonna answer, like, we all quit. The wage sucks. Like, there's one person that works here. I saw one online the other day that's like, if you have a complaint about the service, I'll hand you an application, because like there are not enough people that work here to deal with your frustration if you run out of patience.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Which, they said what they said.
Yeah, I like those kind of remarks. But yeah, you know, not like you rely on particular things. The people that are part of the chain that has those things come to you are important and deserve to like make a fair wage, you know, especially when they're putting themselves at risk. And like everybody, they're essential, you know, it's not like lowest rung work. And I think it's been treated that way for a long time.
Yeah.
But only because, sorry.
Please go ahead, yes.
But only because the wages and the have degraded to the point that those are not even really like working class jobs anymore. They're like barely getting by jobs. You know what I mean? Like if you worked at a grocery store, for example, like those over time, the wage that you would make has become like less and less of a percentage of like median income.
I get what you mean. I think that I think that could be a whole episode of its own. Because what comes to mind is like large conglomerate workers, and from my understanding, you know, from speaking with an aunt that worked at a conglomerate, at like a grocery store. I don't know if we can say the name or not, but
it depends. Did the aunt have a good or a bad experience?
No, it's fine. She said that like you get paid more the longer that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I was, you know, but now I'm thinking, I'm like, wait, paid more in comparison to what? And then my mom, right. Who is unionized, it's like they've had a totally, well, it's not like my aunt by birth. Anyway, it's like a family friend.
Yeah.
And their experiences as workers has been like tremendous, mm-hmm. you know, and like just talking about unions and the working class, I think that could be a whole episode of its own.
Yeah.
Which one day maybe hopefully we'll dive into.
Well, yeah, I guess the thing that I'm thinking about right now is like, is it the work itself is not valuable or is like lesser to do, or is it just not paid enough to sustain somebody and to sustain a family, you know? I don't know.
Sustainability through a paycheck. Well, and then you have to, you know, not every person is the same. You can have someone who's like a high school student who's working at like a fast food joint, and then you have someone else who's like their peer or like, you know, their works with them, but they're, you know, they're a mother of five or something, you
yeah,
know, so it's like totally
time.
Different. And then to my mind, I've always wondered, as you know, as I was coming up in the workforce, I've actually not taken time off or not taken vacation, because I'm like, I'd rather my coworker who has a family that like, mm-hmm. you know, that has someone to spend time to, like, I'd rather them like do like take that time off, and I'll go ahead and I'll stay, you know, especially when I worked in kitchens and stuff. But now I've like wondered, and this is maybe another thing with like, you know, the workforce, is how much does that get taken advantage of by bosses, you
mm-hmm.
know, while you're not necessarily trying to like take one for the team, you're just kind of like, you have a family, you know, that you take care of, I don't, like, you know, I don't care. So, but we, you know, it's like these things, I don't know, the union cares. And
mm-hmm.
and also another thing that I've learned is the union isn't this like outside body that's like not really related to, that you go to when things are bad. It's you, it's the workers, it's the workforce. So
mm-hmm.
it's seeing how things work in like a unionized workplace and non-unionized has been interesting. But I think that, I don't know, we as workers, it's like, how much are we willing to sacrifice? How much? Because, you know, you said scabs. If someone comes in, takes your job, you're on strike, someone comes in, takes your job, then you're kind of, you know, SOL. Like, you're going to the back of the line. And then what do you do with that, you know? And there's great things like, you know, like solidarity packages where, you know, and like there is like union funds and stuff, but those run out. And, you know, we don't know how long this could last.
The success of a strike or, you know, of any union action is, you know, it is influenced by like how the community reacts and responds as to like where that strike is, you know. They're not, I mean, I guess most of the time scabs are probably from the same area, but I think it probably is a tactic to bring in folks who are like not connected to the area, not connected to the people that are like impacted by whatever bad working conditions that they're dealing with.
It feels like such a cycle of manipulation, you know. And because even a scab, you know, it's you have we got to eat, right?
Yeah.
You know, then try to explain to someone that, no, don't do this because it's better for your future. It's like, well, what does my future count when I'm hungry now? So
I had a thought about the whole manipulation thing you were bringing up, and like the difference between a unionized, non-unionized workplace. I have a friend of mine who like just graduated college and was entering the workforce, and like, you know, first week of her new job was like excelling and already like was becoming a resource for other people and being like, oh, like it'll just be faster if you do it, or like, hey, can you do this for me? And she's like taking work home with her and not tallying the total number of hours that she's really doing work for this business because, you know, guilt tripping or feeling bad or, you know, some
Especially
amount
when
of
you're young in the workforce, you think that this is helping you somehow.
Or like that somebody will notice, or that there's pride. I mean, there is a sense of pride there. It's like, hey, I'm doing a good job. Everybody wants my help because I'm doing a good job. But if you're not even filling out a time card that bills the total hours, like no one, your supervisor isn't even going to know the amount of work that other people have put on you. And if they can't afford to pay you 15 hours a day, if that's what you're doing, then they need to figure out a different like work distribution for you. And that's what I was trying to to advocate for her, was to try to, you know, explore that and to maintain like that doesn't like mess with your integrity, you know, like you are still, I don't know, you're not like cheating somebody or like doing a bad thing by being paid for all of the work that you do, you know?
Oh yeah. It's an interesting relationship between, you know, integrity, wanting to do a good job, and compensation. And I think the younger you are, the less education that you have about what your rights are as a worker, it's very easy to take advantage of you. And it's very easy, moreover, to put people in line, quote unquote, by taking it out on like a specific person, or retaliation, which, you know, under, you know, it's illegal. So that's where, like, you know, I was seeing all the videos and stuff from the not the rally, from the strikes, and I was just like, a small yet meaningful tear shut down my face, because I was just like, yeah, man, this is us, you know, because like, it's us. It's like, we're not the, you know, we're the, you know, so
yeah,
who's gonna, like, no one is gonna stand up for, you know, like, it's like no one, it's no one's gonna come save you, you know. But it's good to, when you are at your breaking moment as an individual, to have like the union, like your friends, your coworkers, is, you know, like it is
powerful stuff.
But I do think compensation, the figuring out compensation, and almost it's really gross, because then it's like, how much am I worth at the workplace, you know? And it's like, I like, that feels to me personally, it feels gross. Like, I have to figure out what my monetary value is in this workplace. But this is not just a workplace. It's going to keep going. It's in, you know, in this society. So unless we do some drastic changes towards our liberation, then we, you know, we'll have to, that's what we are doing and will be doing. And history has shown that it's doesn't help, but this type of stuff is very encouraging to see. And also, much like, for example, like Newberg, you know, where it was just kind of like, the world is watching to see what happens. I think that these movements a lot of people are watching to see what happens with Nabisco and Kellogg's and Kaiser and
John Deere.
Yes, and Holly Weird and all of that, just because, you know, it's again, it's that solidarity, but it's that work, and it creates a blueprint. And now, you know, once this is, God willing, like, succeeds and people get, the workers get what they deserve and what they're working for, that just motivates, activates, and mobilizes other groups and other organization and worker organizations. So this is, it's, and I think that they know this, that it's more than just them. It's more than their just individual paycheck or their individual town. Like, and that's the, I think, the beauty and solidarity that you see yourself as a small pixel on a much greater screen, you know?
Yeah. Ooh, I like what you said there. Oh my gosh. Yeah, and part of in some of the reading I was doing in preparation for this segment was talking about, you know, just like this the labor shortage, the Great Resignation, which are things that we've talked about before on this show, like combined with a greater willingness to strike. And what you're saying is like the visibility of other groups doing it, you know, and that, you know, knock on wood, nothing like terrible has happened yet, you know, I think like has shifted some of the power back to the labor force if they can grab hold of it, which I think is really interesting. But I also wanted to point out there's another tweet here, just to contextualize a little bit from @krosso1, strikes are cool, but let's put this year in context. Still on track for 2021 to be in the bottom five for annual major work stoppages in the U.S. since 1947, though with 9 major work stoppages so far this year. The lowest is 5 in 2009, and the high mark since it was 25 in 2019, so like recently.
But
so they're higher profile, I think, but I don't know that they're... there's not been like quantifiably as many as years past.
Gotcha.
So I think that that's kind of interesting to factor in here. Don't mean to derail anything.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's interesting. I'm still blown away by the essential worker. To be able to name that so clearly, it's like, yep, that's what it is.
Yeah,
that's what it is. I'm feeling myself right now. I'm essential, and you're gonna have to pay for this.
I bet the bigwigs are mad that they can't, that they said that now. They're a little aggravated. They're like, ew, couldn't we have come up with a more degrading term for them?
I know, right? Yes.
Sort of the peasants that need to bring me my bread, but also make the bread. Those are the two kind of things that I rely on them for.
Definitely fully, essentially empowered for Jerseys. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Are we done with Striketober for now?
Ready we are to move done on to with, our... with Striketober for right now, and we are going to go on a very, very quick musical break, and then we'll be back with our community question where we open up the phone lines for listeners. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Keep it locked to KBOO Portland.
Blood shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes strong.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Forever, for the union makes us strong.
They
have taken untold millions that they never toil to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
That was Pete Seeger with the Solidarity Forever here on KBOO Portland. You're listening to The Gap. I am Tammy, and with me is, of course, the one and only Althea. How's it going, Althea?
Hello. I'm good. Excited to get into our community question. But before we do, just want to remind folks this is the second to last day of our fall membership drive themed around the sounds of democracy. Which, hey, we're doing a little bit of that today. And we'll get into it a little bit more when we get to start hearing from our community here in just a couple minutes. And, you know, KBOO is 80% funded by our listeners and members. And so we would really could use your support if you're able. KBOO.fm/give and texting KBOO to 44321 will get you that info. You know, less than 3% of our listeners are members. Who are, you know, making monthly contributions to us. So, hey, maybe you've been thinking about it. Maybe it is time to take the action and to support the programs that you rely on that are a part of your routine. KBOO.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
Also, mail donations are more than acceptable. You can mail in a donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, 97214.
Yup.
Fantastic. Right. So we are ready for part two of the show. This is the part where we open up the phone lines for the community in our community question. I need more background music.
I'm wondering if we should get like an echo sound effect for the voice.
I'm community getting a Casio. Question. That's it. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Colin, do we need more sound effects on this show? That's not the question. The answer is yes, also.
This community question, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going back in my notes, and I was looking at this poem by Audre Lorde, Eleni for Survival, and it made me think about survival and what it means and what it looks like, especially during these times or past these times, unprecedented times,
certainly,
as we've been used to hearing it, and kind of like what to, you know, like what people look like after surviving something. What does life look like after survival? Which isn't necessarily what the poem is about, but just like that really made me think, because my impression is we're not meant to survive, we're meant to live. But gosh darn it, it is difficult sometimes. So, yes, for a question is, as Althea wrote, COVID has obviously changed everything. So for the listeners, what is one thing that you want to go back to in pre-pandemic world? And what is a thing that you hope we never go back to? Or what do you want to take from pandemic times moving forward? So just like how kind of has this impacted you? What things have you learned, want to take with you? And what things do we never want to go back to again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give us a call, 503-231-8187. We would love to hear your thoughts on that. And kind of like, you know, duality, two things. If you can come with two things, we would love to hear that. Something that you miss and want to go back to, something that has changed and you're taking it, you want to take it forward. I think that those are... It's kind of I like the framing of it just because, like, I feel like there's been dwelling on either side, if that makes sense. It's like, oh, the pre-pandemic times, we're going to go back to them, of course, and it's going to be exactly the same versus, like, everything's different and the world is
really hard to live in those, like, extremes,
yeah.
You know, which at a certain time, I think, like, we were just, like, going day by day, you know, mm-hmm. day just getting information as it comes in. But now I think we have our feet are a bit more sturdy right now, a little bit more, not completely, of course. And God only knows what's going to happen with the wintertime. Let's try to stay positive here. Mm. But I guess, you know, I can kick it off.
Yeah, please.
For me, one thing that I personally am has survived through the pandemic and just this time that we've been through is I'm never letting anyone be racist to me ever again. Uh-uh. I got names. I got ways to describe how I'm feeling.
Mm.
I sometimes make fun of people. Like, oh, you just learned about racism last year? Oh, my God, this sucks. Yeah, at least people know about it now. Or at least more of my friends are aware how it impacts me. It impacts them, you know. So we have, like, the language to talk about it and to name it and to dissect it and to understand it for ourselves together, but then also, like, for us and as a community all together, because it is, you know, the anti-blackness is real in this lifetime. And so I've taken a lot of things and just kind of been like, oh, whatever, shrugged it off. But no more. No one is ever going to let me feel some sort of way without me. Without me being able to fully access what it means to me and how I'm going to digest it and whether it's going to resonate with me and what I'm going to say back. So that's something that I'm really glad that we went through these growing pains together. Some things that, another thing I'll never go back to, the mask in restaurants, I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah.
I think it's cleaner. It's like, you know, I've worked in the back of the house, so I know, I don't know how I've ever worked in kitchens without having a face mask on. It's like, because they have like beard nets and hair nets, but like not face mask. But now I'm thinking,
can I say something controversial yet brave?
Please do.
I would rather find a hair in my food than see somebody spit in it. I think that there's more germs.
Just a little protein.
Or even just your breath, your breathing, the, you know, saliva. There's, you know, you've worn a mask. You've seen how it gets kind of wet in there. That's been in my food this whole time. Like, I'd rather pick out a hair. It's like a solid thing.
Right. Yeah, that's like, true. Yeah.
Geez, I hope it. I mean, you know, probably did get up to temperature, but at what point did you breathe on it? You know?
Right.
Not total germophobia. But yeah, if other folks have thoughts, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. We're asking, you know, thinking of COVID as this marker, obviously we're not outside of it, but thinking about, like, what's one thing that you want to go back to from your pre-pandemic life? And what's the one thing that, you know, from pandemic times you want to take forward into whatever comes next? And I don't feel like speculating about what that will be, because it will make me sad.
How about
endemic? I just don't want to do it.
How about you, while listeners call in at 503-231-8187, anything that you want to take with you or leave it?
Yeah, I think I one thing I like miss, and this is like, and hey, folks, call if you got something petty about it, call in, because that's what came to mind for me immediately, was like, what's something that I want to go back to in before the pandemic, was like that I could just leave the house and not have a plan. Was kind of cool. And like, did I even put shoes on? I don't know. You know, most of the time I did, but just being able to have a more of like meandering, or I'll see where the day takes me, you know, without being like, without having, you know, the limitations of masking and distancing. And like, I probably gotta go to my house later if I have to use the bathroom, like that sucks, you know, stuff like that. It just having to be more conscious of that stuff. I'm doing it. Everything's fine. It's just I kind of miss having a more lackadaisical approach to going out in public. I kind of miss that. And one thing that I hope we're not going back to is, like last year was the first year that I wasn't like sick with a cold or some nebulous virus every 2 weeks or so. As somebody who worked in a relative pretty public office, a lot of people come into our space, so. And then, you know, before that, like being in school and stuff, like I didn't really get that sick last year. I didn't have, you know, an intense two three month span of just like kind of being in a bad way. So I do hope that, you know, being more conscientious around cold and flu season, you know, not getting other people sick if you don't have to, I think is something that I'm interested in going forward. And also to like personal space. I kind of like it. you don't need to be up in my business.
The personal space. Ooh, don't get me started on the personal space. I like it. I like it a whole lot. I've had to actually like reel myself in and be like, okay, Tammy, chill out. Like they can be this close to you. It's yeah, definitely agree with you on that. Another thing that I wanted to add is also essential workers. Mm. Now that I think, and okay, this is just I statements. I think that now that I've seen that I can get a lot accomplished without having to spend my time in one location, made me think, oh, this is interesting.
Mm.
Oh, wow, okay. And of course, like, you know, like you mentioned, this is a public space, and it's honestly, like, the greatest part about working at the station is to be at the station, you know, mm-hmm. pushing the knobs and everything. But it made me think of, like, you know, like, in the larger global sphere of, like, nonprofits and stuff, like, the world didn't, people kept doing their thing, just mm-hmm. did it from home. You know, maybe a little bit of learning curve here and there, but people still got the things done. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how it's taking up a whole day just to, you know, to get to an office, to sit down, all you know, to just whatever the inner office politics and all of that, when you could have just been doing it from home, hanging out with a dog, like, you know, eating, like, food you make at home and not, you know, having to spend money on food outside. It opened up my eyes, because I only thought that really, like, rich people get to work from home, and, mm-hmm. like, you know, people who've, you know...
I assumed it was people who had a home office.
Yes, like, PhDs and, like, accountants and, like, I don't know, people that, I don't know, like, diamond makers, I don't know, like, just rich people, not I, the cat. But look at us now, you know, having the ability to, or I think that the workforce in general, just realizing that wait, we've been bamboozled. We can do things differently.
Yeah.
And I'm not going back to the bamboo.
There's value in both. And I think that, you know, in my experience in the past, the idea of working from home is like, oh, really? Like, you're going to work from home? What are you even doing while you're there? And just having, you know, whether that's from the boss or from coworkers or whatever, of just like this attitude of kind of like, it's an invalid version of your work. And I guess one thing that I hope going forward is that, you know, there's some recognition about what the value of, you know, in-person work is versus like remote work. That, you know, I have missed in-person work some, just because it's like, wow, we can really get things done quite a bit quicker if I can just go to your office and say like, hey, what's the deal with this thing? But also that remote work is sometimes really great for your focus and for getting stuff done.
Indeed. And we do have a caller on the line to speak with us about this. Tawasi, am I saying your name right? I'm sorry.
That's all right. You know, a lot of people struggle with kind of non-Anglo names. My name's Tawasi. And I just wanted to talk about kind of like before we had this illusion that, you know, the government was kind of there for us and that if everything collapsed, we would be rescued. And now we don't really have to have that illusion anymore, especially with like the pulling back of the eviction moratorium and the ending of unemployment. Like all those jobs went away and it's not like they're coming back.
Mm.
And then, you know, all the people who are left in the lurch on those bills, the bank's going to take, they're going to take those houses. You know, I laugh because it's not really sad. It's not really funny, it's sad, but I laugh because as an indigenous person, having my land taken is like, oh yeah, they took our land, ha ha ha, because it's been shrugged off and just like laughed at so many times in history, and now we're seeing it come home to the colonizers where the banks are taking their land. And so kind of before we had this illusion like the government's going to come and help us, but we can really let go of that now, and I feel good about that.
Yeah, you know, that also makes me think of all the mutual aid groups that we saw over the last year and how much they were, it was just us, you know, people power, people money getting circulated to where it's needed most. I'd love to see that keep on, for sure.
Yeah, that's actually kind of been, especially for Northwest indigenous people, our way of life, like potluck culture. Says that the people who have a wealth of blankets or a wealth of food, gift it, and make sure that the whole community is cared for. So, you know, I encourage people, if you're familiar with potluck culture, then organize sharing events.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Tawasi. That's
yeah, and just one more thing real quick.
Please.
If you're at all involved in mutual aid or caring about community change, then what I feel we absolutely need going forward, especially as the supply chain breakdown exacerbates, is to create food sovereignty. And so, you know, growing, even just like cutting the stalk of your celery or your onion, the root of your onion or your lettuce, put that in a little bit of water and have just the smallest amount of food sovereignty. Because again, as a person of indigenous descent, then food sovereignty is one of the first things they took away from us, and it's very intentional. So as we go forward looking more to each other and less toward the government that's not there for us ultimately, reclaiming food sovereignty in Portland, I feel like, is super important, especially right now as all the fruit is falling. But anyway, thanks for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's another great reminder of things to take forward. I appreciate that. If other folks want to call, please do. 503-231-8187. We are talking about, you know, things pre-pandemic that we wish we would want to go back to and things we don't want to go back to, or lessons, you know, practices to take forward. And Tawasi brought up some really great points there: food sovereignty, mutual aid, and you know, banks taking people's houses, the government not being, you know, a trusted resource that, you know, many people had perceived it to be.
And I think because of the chain of events that led us to hear more people, whether they want to or not, and I think you mentioned it too, about this like new consciousness that we're all kind of maneuvering in with, whether it is like the distance or, oh, let me just check to make sure this place is open because maybe they have COVID hours, right? Mm. And I think that it ripples down to so much, like, oh, like in the beginning of COVID, there was a lot of shortages, like, you know, with like toilet paper and you yeah. know, but like, I can tell for myself that I was worried, like, oh, what about if like rice and beans or, you know, or like, or like veggies and stuff that I want. And it really made me realize that you can only kind of rely on yourself and your community, because, you know, we see it in the strikes that these big companies, like, they don't really necessarily care about the people or the customers. It's a bottom line. And it seems, and, you know, kind of going off of what he said, that unfortunately, the government is just, it showed itself to not have the interest of us, which, you know, I guess technically, you know, from business terms, the customers.
Right.
It's just kind of about the bottom line. And
or maybe it's
really
rather
painful.
a reframing or a coming to the light of who is the real customer of the government.
Oh, who's really the boss, you say?
Angela.
Well, yeah, I think this is kind of like this thing of feeling bamboozled again, where it's like, wait, you don't have all, like, why did we give, or how was all of our, I don't know, how was so much taken away from us, like so much of our autonomy, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's a good point that, you know, Tawasi brought up about the eviction moratoriums ending and unemployment benefits ending, that it was, you know, the needs of the people that, and the pressure from the people that brought about those, you know, safety nets in the first place. And I think that there's, you know, kind of going to some of the stuff that we've been talking about, events of the past 19 months, recognizing that it is, like, the power is centered in the people, actually. Not to talk about the whole GameStop thing again, but a lot of the structures...
Maybe listeners forgot
about the GameStop thing. But just, you know, Wall Street is made up. It's people betting on stuff. That companies are going to do particular things.
Like,
yeah, they don't like it when the little guy gets in there and cashes out big, you know? And just that there are, that the it is people powered, you know? And that there is, for every one of us, you know, there is strength in us collaborating and putting pressure on government officials, you know, your boss, if you want to go back to the union thing, you know, making mutual aid groups, like collaborating and combining resources and forces to enact the change that's really meaningful to people.
Which in itself is not easy to do, because it takes a lot of hubris, has to, you know, ego has to be dwelled down, like a lot, it takes a strong person who's aware, who's like, who has like a conviction, and it can be a team player, you know, and it's like hard, you know, not everyone can do that. It takes, you have to like truly understand the meaning of people and collaborating with one mm-hmm. another, and like the interest of the community and what that means, and like be able to, you know, because people are going to come as they are. A community yeah. isn't made up of just people who look like you, mm-hmm. you know, unless you live in a really weird community, in which case, I don't know, maybe you should move somewhere where it's more diverse, but not everyone's going to look like you, not everyone's going to think like you, mm-hmm. and to be able to take people as they come, because we are here for like a common interest that's going to benefit us all, like, I don't know, I really like tip my hat to all of the organizers, because they truly take people as they are. And it's not, you know, just recent, obviously, it's like things that have been going on for decades, but you know, like thinking of like the housing crisis, right? And mm-hmm. like how there are people out there taking people as they are, not judging them, still feeding them and still helping them, and still like working with communities that have just been completely neglected, you yeah. know. And you know, when I was talking about this new consciousness, it's like now we see our neighbors and how they're struggling. Now we're seeing our friends and how they're maybe losing their jobs. And I think all of this instability makes a person want to reexamine their situation, you mm-hmm. know? And sometimes you can find yourself like lacking or scared or worried. And the more that you feel like you're on an island, the more that the more that I feel like I'm on an island, the more that I feel like I'm going to drown, you know? Mm-hmm. So, the mutual aid fund, seeing those around, and on it, like throughout pandemic, I'm like, worst case scenario, if something terrible happens, like I see these mutual aid funds and I'll like request something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it felt like really like, you know, like, okay, I could breathe a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that just came to my mind as I was thinking about, like you're saying, a broader consciousness of understanding of, you know, communities and how they relate to each other, things like that. I think maybe there has been a mentality of like, you know, recognizing that problems exist, but feeling like powerless to do anything, right? And that like, oh, well, if I had money, I could donate to this thing. Or if I had money, I could, you know, try to enact some kind of change to make some kind of difference. But, you know, seeing on a broader scale that money definitely does make a difference in a lot of particular ways, but it isn't the only way to enact change or to positively like support somebody.
For sure. And during our Instagram live interview that we'll be doing at 10, we're going to be hearing from an organizer themselves of what it was like to try to organize during a financial collapse when people around you don't have money, like the government, there is no government, you know,
right.
And she really managed to pull it off using just like crowdsourcing and you know, people donating. And it's really interesting because she, you know, she didn't necessarily get support from her immediate community, but still managed to, you know, get some funds and do what she set out to do. And her story especially is interesting because of like, for me, of like how discouraged she felt throughout all of it, but then was actually able to get to the finish line and impact so many people. And I think that's sometimes when it takes for you to do it one time to prove to people, yes, we can do this.
Yeah.
And you're not going to help me? Well, I'm going to do this alone, and I'm going to do this, and next time you'll see that we can do it, and we'll see how much easier it is to do it together.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, 10 a.m. Instagram Live at KB Radio, at The Gap Radio. You'll be able to check it out there if you're interested.
Yes.
So we have just, you know, we're kind of running up on our time here. But I do want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everyone for, you know, sticking with us all these months, me and Tammy. rattling off ideas. Do appreciate everybody. And hey, if you appreciate us back, maybe think about donating to KBOO. We're in the second to last day of our fall membership drive, Sounds of Democracy. That's what we talk about here on this show and, you know, shows up and down the schedule here at KBOO 90.7, 90.1, and Hood River. Sorry, I'm going to get confused about those. But whether you're in the Gorge, the Valley, or in Portland proper, or one of our friends on the web, kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321 to help us out.
Indeed, and if you are interested in donating by check or mail, you can make a donation out to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week.
See ya. Take care.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.